Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawk Talk Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Joining us this week on the podcast, Blackhawk great, an NBC lead hockey analyst and phony prognosticator extraordinaire, the one and only Eddie Olczyk. How you doing, Edzo?
Hey, what's up, PB? Great to be with you, pal.
Great to have you here, and great job at the Kentucky Derby. And I'm going to get your thoughts on Justify making a run at the Triple Crown a little bit later on in the podcast. But let's start with the pucks, and let's begin in the East. What did you think about Alex Ovechkin finally punching his ticket to the conference final?
Well, I'm happy for the Grade 8. I'm happy for, you know, Capital fans, because it's kind of been an exhausting story to talk about all these years. I mean, their arch rival, their nemesis, the Pittsburgh Penguins, knocking them out and having success, and great success. And, you know, the Capitals not able to take that next step. And look, regardless of what happened in that series, I mean, Ovi had a terrific playoff. And, I mean, think about where they were going into the playoffs. Braden Holtby was not the starting goaltender. Yeah. Then they lose the first two games of round one at home against the Columbus Blue Jackets, and then they reel off four straight in that series, and then they take on the Penguins and they win in game six without Nicholas Backstrom and Tom Wilson, who arguably are their, you know, two of their top six forwards, seven forwards maybe. I mean, a gut check time. Ovechkin was really, really good. And, you know, I think selfishly, I'm just glad they took the next step, because it's kind of got an exhausting talking about it, that can they do it? You know, can the Grade 8 get them to the next level? And, hey, they finally were able to get it done with a depleted lineup, and now they're going to get their opportunity at the Tampa Bay Lightning.
And now it looks like Holtby is back to his former self, the one that we saw most of the season. As you take a look at this series against the Lightning that'll begin on Friday, Kucherov has been fantastic for Tampa. Vasilevsky has been very, very solid. Your thoughts on this Lightning Capitals series that will get underway later this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the Capitals to have success, they're going to have to really kind of check their way through this series a lot like they did in this series, PB, against the Penguins, where, I mean, anybody got a chance to see game six, Capitals, Penguins, like Washington just absolutely smothered and checked Pittsburgh to the end. And yeah, there were some moments when Pittsburgh had him on a run, but when you got Sidney Crosby, you're going to go on runs like that, and you're going to have to weather the storm. And weather the storm they did, whether it was Holtby making a couple of great saves or a penalty killing unit to stop them, regardless of what it was. I mean, that's how they're going to have to play Tampa. Like, I think Tampa's a pretty salty team. And full disclosure, I got asked a question at the start of the year who I thought would be in the Stanley Cup final, and I said Nashville and Tampa, so I'm still alive, barely. But I think, PB, look, Tampa, to me, what separates them from what I thought separated them from everybody in the East was, you mentioned Vasilevsky, their goaltender, the moves by Steve Yzerman at the trade deadline, bringing in Ryan McDonough, who you could argue is a top two or three defenseman on any team in the National Hockey League. They brought in JT Miller and the emergence of some young players on that team. You talk about Kucherov. How about Braden Point? I mean, there is a young guy that went head-to-head against Patrice Bergeron. And, oh, by the way, after game one, he was -5. And the kid bounced back in a big way after period one of game two, and really kind of contained that line at even strength. And, you know, I just go touch on that series real quick, PB, with Boston and Tampa. Boston, to me, they won that first game. They won it in a landslide. And then what ended up happening was that as the series went on and the speed picked up, Boston just, they didn't have much left in the tank. And I think what happened was, as you go back to round one with Toronto and Boston, Boston had a chance to eliminate the Maple Leafs in game five, and they weren't able to do it. Then they had to go play a game six. They weren't able to do it. And then eventually they won a game seven. And I really believe this. That it takes its toll on you. I've lived it. Like, when you got a chance to knock a team out, you got to take advantage. It may not come up and show in game one of round two like it did, because it looked like they were shot out of a cannon in round two, game one against the Lightning. But as the series went on, they looked tired to me, and they didn't have that same sustained jump they did earlier. So when you get a chance, you got to go ahead and knock them out. And I just think with Tampa, I just think that they're so deep, they're so quick. You want to play a physical game, they got some guys that aren't afraid to run you through the end boards. They've got guys that have been there, and Chris Kunitz, that's one. I think he's won four cups, if I'm not mistaken. So, I give Tampa the edge, because they have the home ice. And home ice doesn't mean anything for me, PB. We've talked over the years about it, until you get to a game seven. It doesn't matter where you play the other games. I would want that game seven in my building, but I give Tampa the slight edge. But I think it's going to be a heck of a series. I really do.
It was not a move that made a lot of headlines, but from Blackhawks' perspective and the fan base, what do you think Michael Kempney has brought to the Capitals' blue line?
Well, what a role he has taken on. I mean, he's playing with John Carlson.
Yeah, that's going to make anybody better, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, matching up against Crosby in round two. He played against the Breadman in round one when the matchups were conducive for Washington when they get the last change. But he's getting an opportunity, and he's playing through mistakes. He's playing through some tough shifts, and he's in the lineup every night, and he's contributed in a big time way. He doesn't look like he's trying to do too much. He's fit in really well with John Carlson. Look, John Carlson is an unrestricted free agent. No defenseman in the league had more points in the regular season than John Carlson. Yeah, I just think he's found a partner there that he's very comfortable with, and they read off each other well, and he's been physical, and he's tried to add a little bit of offense, but I think he knows his role. The guy I'm playing with is the guy that's going to be the guy that butters the bread, and I'm going to be the guy back here just massaging it before we put it in the oven. And I think that's what it is. But his confidence level did not see that here with the Blackhawks. And like I said, he's just getting more of a consistent opportunity. And I think he knows, PB, and there's something to this, because I lived it as a player, and I tried to, make sure that when I was coaching in Pittsburgh a handful of years ago, is like, guys got to – there's no better feeling for a player to know that, hey, if I screw up or if I make a mistake, there's a pretty good chance I'm going to go back out there. Now, if you continue to make the same mistake, and there were times when Michael Kempney looked lost and struggled here, maybe he would have taken out a lineup or he wouldn't play. And that's tough on a player, let alone, a younger player or a player that comes over from Europe. And I just think that he's very comfortable, and he has been – he has been one of those, unsung pickups when you look at all the teams still remaining when you talk about help on the back end.
Yeah, I think it also goes to what you talked about, how the addition, and I'm not saying by any means the Hawks are going to get John Carlson, but adding a top 4D can help lift the play of one of the younger Blackhawks defensemen that are paired with that top 4D. So, strength sometimes can come in different ways, and we're seeing that certainly with Kempney being out there with John Carlson.
Yeah, I mean, chemistry too, and that's something to that. And sometimes you got to mix and match, and certainly Coach Q certainly knows all about that, being a former D-man in his playing days, and now having three cups, and there isn't a lot that he hasn't seen. And sometimes two systems too. That's something that maybe doesn't get talked about a lot, PB, and I mean, I'm going to end up touching on that. I got my assignment for the first for round three here coming up. I'm actually going to be heading to Nashville for game seven. I get to do Jets and Predators for game seven here in round two, but then I'm going to be in studio for the first couple of games of each round, and then I'm going to head to Washington for game three to work with Doc Emmerich. But I think sometimes systems and schematics, sometimes players just fit right. And sometimes that piece of the puzzle goes right in there. And then sometimes there you got a, you know, you got a square piece trying to get it into a, an oval opening, and it just, it doesn't work, you know. And whether it's philosophy, whether it's schematics, whether it's understanding how to play, whether it's what coaches want you to do, just sometimes it doesn't work, right or wrong. And we can name 100 players right now, forwards, defense, that's the reality of it. And for Michael Kempney, it's pretty simple, is that he's adapted well to the system, he's fit in extremely well, and he's playing on a top pair.
Let's switch to that Jets-Predator series.
Yeah.
Winnipeg was unable to close out Nashville in Winnipeg on Monday. You'll be there Game 7 Thursday night in the Hockey Tonk. Tons of talent on both sides. You know, it's really lived up to the hype. Just two fantastic teams to watch. My question to you is, you know, the Jets are going to have some, you know, significant roster and cap decisions here in the next couple of years, but do you feel the gap, after watching these two teams play, the gap between the Hawks roster and both the Jets and Preds, you know, in their own division, is a significant one, or is it one that, it, you know, the gap could be made up quicker than many of us maybe expect?
Yeah, well, I guess if you're looking at it, is right now on whatever we are, May the 8th or whatever the date is, it's hard not to look at it, especially on the back end. Like that to me, PB, we talked a lot about it. You asked me at the end of the year on one of our broadcasts. I was on site. I think we were in LA. You asked me, you know, what's the one thing that, you know, I think needed to change or to get the Hawks out of what they've been in all season long. And to me, it's the defense. It's the defensive core. Now, how can that change? Well, you know, can some of these guys get it? Can some of these guys who we're in and out of lineup become consistent D-men? Well, only time will tell. I mean, they got a lot of opportunity and experience, and, you know, can they take the next step now? Does Stan Bowman able to make a move? Is he able to get creative and bring in somebody? I mean, they're the only ones that can certainly answer that. But to me, the dramatic difference when you look at all the three teams, the two that you mentioned are playing in a Game 7 in Nashville coming up on Thursday. And the Hawks, to me, is on the back end. The depth, the mobility, the experience, and the size, it's what it is. And the Hawks are on the outside looking in, and these two teams, somebody's looking to go to the conference final. So I just think, especially on the back end, and I think that this team, and I've said this publicly before, is, I think that this team, the Blackhawks, have another run in them, but they're going to need some help, and they're going to need some guys to take their game to another level. And all you got to do is get in, PB, right? Just get in now. For, you know, winning the division, is that going to be a reality? That's the question that, you know, people will be asking. I think more of a question is you know, are they going to be able to get one of the playoff spots, whether it's second in division, third in division, or one of the wild cards? You're going to need, and it's been talked about, but you're going to need 98 plus points to get in. Like, that is it. And we all know about Corey Crawford. They got to get Crow back. There's no question about that, and that will certainly help. But I look at it from a hockey point of view and go, okay, is their D good enough right now? Well, the answer is no, because what happened this year. Now, you could say, you can blame this, you can say this guy had a bad year. Well, fact of the matter is I think if you ask any hockey person, when you look at the defense, the way it is assembled and who is on the lineup as of today, you know, I don't think there'd be any doubt that, you know, the Hawks would be third on that list. And as we see, you got to have back-enders. And when the Hawks have had incredible runs in most importantly three championships in 8 or 9 years, whatever the number is, a lot of it had to do with the back end and the guys that were on the back end. And if you don't get that production, whether it's defensively or offensively, you're going to find yourself in a battle to make the playoffs.
Since you're calling Game 7 Nashville and Winnipeg, I'm not going to ask you to pick a winner there. I'm just going to ask you, do you think the the team that survives Game 7, are they the favorite to win the Cup? Or, you know, is Vegas, because they're rested and, you know, kind of waiting, is that give them a slight edge early on in that series coming off of a seven-game emotional series like the Preds and Jets?
Yeah, you know what, PB? I mean, it's really amazing. Think about that. The Vegas Golden Knights are 8 wins away from winning the Stanley Cup.
That's crazy. They weren't like even in existence a year ago at this time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if they're not the team of the year in sports, there's something wrong. Like, I would be absolutely furious, and I would not be afraid to share that whenever I get that opportunity. But I thought going into this Jets-Predators series, it was going to feel like a 10-game series when they were done. And we're going to the seventh game, and I think for both teams it might be a blessing that there's 2 days in between to give them an opportunity to breathe a little bit, rest a little bit, and give it all they got. And like I said, when you got an opportunity, Winnipeg had a chance to knock the Predators out, and the Predators played an absolute perfect road game. You know, how will it all play out now? For Vegas, no pun intended, but they are playing with house money. I mean, there's no question about it. And look, this is a legitimate team to win the Stanley Cup. Look at the job that George McPhee, the general manager, has done, the understanding of the type of team that you have to assemble. They've got toughness. They've got a back end with some experience. They've got a back end that is mobile. They've got some guys up front that have been there, in a guy like James Neal and David Perron and Eric Halla, you know, guys that have been around the block, Ryan Reeves, you know, tough guy that they picked up. And then the guy in goal, right? I mean, he's played in one cup himself and then a part of two runs with Pittsburgh. So Marc-Andre Fleury with 3 Stanley Cups. Like, look, whoever got down on Vegas at 500-1 at the start of the season, God bless. I mean, like, it's just an amazing story, PB. It really is. Like, just to be ahead and go find a guy like William Karlsson, who a draft pick of Anaheim, then he's in Columbus, you know, he got, 6 goals, whatever. I mean, and the guy gets 41 goals this year. And I think Jerry Gallant's going to be coach of the year, the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, without question. Like, it's hands down, he's going to win it. That's just the reality. And you got to give him and his staff a lot of credit. I mean, they play a certain way. The guys have bought in, and I had not been there all year, PB, because being sick all season long. I just happened to miss those trips that the Hawks were out there. I was out there for game, I can't even remember what game it was. I was out there for game 3, I believe, of that series between San Jose. I was out there for game 2. I'm sorry. Game 2, I was out there. And, I mean, I was just taken back with the energy and just the way it's all set up. So, look, yeah, Vegas is going to be well rested. Whoever wins this series between the Preds and Jets, I'm sure they're going to be feeling it at some point in this next series. But, you know, both these teams are bigger and heavier against Vegas. And they can skate. And they haven't, like, Vegas has not seen a team yet in the playoffs that is built like Nashville or Winnipeg. And what I mean by that, they saw the size of L.A., but they didn't have the speed. They saw experience and some skill level in San Jose. They didn't see the speed. Like, San Jose, I was asked a question by somebody in Vegas, one of their columnists, and said, you know, this is going to be a really fast series. It's, you know, two teams that can really skate. And I was like, I don't mean to interrupt you, but, like, I don't think of San Jose as a fast team. Like, they play fast. They're very well coached, but they're not a fast team. Like, Vegas, to me, is one of the top, for sure, top 5 or 6 teams in the league when you talk about just speed quotient. They haven't seen 2 teams. Like, Nashville can get up and go. Winnipeg is sneaky quick. And then, like I said, they have the size aspect of it to go ahead and just try to pound you into submission. So, long-winded, I would be surprised if either Winnipeg or Nashville can't take out Vegas. But you know what? Maybe it's meant to be. Maybe it's meant to be for the greatest regular season run of any expansion team in any professional sport to get to the championship round in their particular sport. You know, maybe it is. Maybe it's just the stars are aligned, and you know, Vegas is going to get that trip to the Stanley Cup final. But I think that Nashville or Winnipeg would certainly have you know, have an incredible opportunity there if they do indeed win that game seven.
Do you feel that Ryan Hartman has made a meaningful impact since he was traded to the Predators?
I think at times, you know, I think at times his play has been inconsistent, I think, as it was here. I think he's still probably trying to find his role. I'm looking forward to seeing him in Nashville for Game 7. I mean, the Predators lost Mike Fisher after Period 1 of Game 6, and you know, Hartsey did not play in that Game 6. So, you know, speculation. I mean, if Fisher is out or there's another injury, I mean, I would imagine that Hartsey would be the next man up. So, you know, again, I think finding the role, finding a comfort zone, getting some traction. I mean, he scored a huge goal earlier in the series. So, you know, look, he got suspended in round one against Colorado. But, you know, I think he's still, you know, he's still a young guy trying to find his way. And, you know, look, Nashville's got one thing on their mind. That's winning a cup. Like, this isn't about feelings. This isn't about, you know, we gave up a first round. I mean, look at Vegas, for example. Vegas gave up a first, a second, and a third round for Tomas Tatar. And he's played half the games, if I'm not mistaken. You know, they've played what? They played 11 games, I think, or... I don't know. Did they sweep L.A.? I can't remember.
Yeah, yes, they did.
Okay, so they've only played 10 games. I don't think Tatar's played five yet. So anyway, what I'm saying is they acquired Tomas Tatar from the Detroit Red Wings for a first, a second, and a third rounder. And it's like, hey, you know what? You may be good next year, but right now you can't crack our lineup, so sorry. You're going to sit on the bench. And, you know, and I think that, you know, you look at Hartsey's situation, you know, you give up a first rounder for him and, but you know he has some depth, and obviously he's been around guys that have had success in Chicago. So I don't think you could ever underestimate that. And you know, if Fisher is out, or if there's somebody else out for Game 7, I would be surprised if Hartsey doesn't get an opportunity to get in there. And again, just he did a good job early in the series killing penalties, and that would be an area that Peter Laviolette could use Ryan Hartman.
I think I know where you're going to go with this next question, but. You know, look, no secret, the salary cap's not been kind to the Hawks during this cup era. They've had to revamp this team, you know, several times now. Of all the players they've had to say goodbye to, whether it was trade or just letting them go because of salary cap reasons, when you look at the Shaws, the Lads, the Vermets, the Lettys, the Browers, the Bufflins, is Big Buff, is he the biggest loss considering the level of play he's maintained the last 8 years and – oh, by the way, the Hawks need on the back end.
Yeah. Yeah. Big is, yeah. When you talk about Big, you got to start with Big Buff. probably the largest human we have in the NHL. I know Zdeno Chara is, you know, off the charts, but I don't think anybody tilts in the Toledo's any heavier than Big Buff. And, yeah, you know, like, when he was here, I think, you know, most people remember him, PB, as a forward, right? A power forward, a guy that would go in and crush defensemen. And I know there are a lot of defensemen in the league that were pretty thrilled that Buff, you know, got to the back end. And there's less chance of getting run over by a D-man in your own zone, you know, if you're a defenseman. But, you know, it's funny, and I think when I got asked that question a handful of years ago, like, I think when the Hawks lost Andrew Ladd, like, I thought that was really a you know, was really huge, and you know, as it's, you know, kind of played out. And again, look, I mean, you know, Buff's a little younger than Ladder is, but you know, I think in the big picture, it's tough to find guys that have size and can intimidate, right? And Buff certainly does that. You know, the perfect scenario. I mean, I think he's improved his defense big time, but also have that ability of to go ahead and say, you know, we're going to put him up on the wing for a couple of shifts and like change the momentum of a hockey game. And but you know, hey, that's, you know, that's the way it is. And Hawks have had a boatload of success, and I don't think anybody in that organization or anybody in the city would ever trade one of those Stanley Cups for, you know, keeping a guy or whatever, because you're in it to play and it's a business. And, you know, look, I mean, you know, could the Hawks have held on to him and paid him, you know, $6 million or whatever? But I mean, the first contract he got, you know, his post contract, so his first contract outside his entry level contract, is where it went sideways. Like, you know, go back and see what Buff was making the first couple of years, and then he came out and he went from, you know, making high sevens or whatever he was making to $3 million a year. Like, at that time, Buff was just scratching the surface. And that's why when you manage a salary cap, is you just can't overpay guys. Like, you have to overpay your stars.
Right.
And Buff wasn't a star at that time. But, you know, that happened, and the so-called rest is history. But, yeah, I would say that he's a different cat. There's no doubt about it. And I'm looking forward to seeing him as well on the morning of Game 7.
I know you've been locked in on the Stanley Cup playoffs. World Championships are going on in Denmark. You played in four of those, right?
Yeah.
Here's my question to you as I watch a guy like Connor Murphy.
Sure.
Can experience in that tournament on that large ice surface, you know, how does that translate to the NHL game?
Well, I mean, I think confidence-wise is that if you can play well and have success, you can carry that over without question, knowing that you're playing at a really high level and in pressure situations. Now, it's a much different game over there. I mean, the rinks are way wider. It's a much different game, especially for a defenseman. I mean, there is no doubt. And look, Connor Murphy's not fleet of foot.
Right.
But it forces you to make decisions and skate a little bit more over there. I mean, that's just the reality of the game. I think anything to build your confidence, anything to play in important moments. I don't think Connor Murphy has played in the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he's never.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, look, the more experience any player can get. Look, I was an honor to go over there. And look, I was disappointed that I was either out of the playoffs or didn't make the playoffs. But to get the chance to go over there, and one year I was able to be Brian Burke, longtime NHL executive, just left the Calgary Flames. Berkey was the general manager of one of our teams, and I think we were over in Germany, and I was able to be captain. And I mean, that was a thrill and a half, you know, to be the captain of Team USA over there. And I know Kaner's over there now, and I mean, it's just a great thrill. But yeah, I think you can. I think that you can use that to your advantage. But again, I mean, over there, you're playing a certain system. It's a different type of game, and then you come back, and then you're playing in a smaller rink, and you know it's a different schematic. So again, that all that kind of plays into it. But I just think psychologically, PB, without a doubt, to be over there and playing competitive hockey is a good thing, regardless if you come off a great year or a bad year. You can really benefit from representing your country and getting that opportunity. And I would encourage, especially because I'm, you know, not afraid to say, is that I want our country to win every event that we play in and have success, is that, you know, I want players to go there. Like when Team USA calls, it's yes, you know, when do I leave and where are we going? It can't be, well, you know, and it's happened too many times and seen too many years where, especially in the World Championships, because yeah, you come off a long season, you got family, you know, maybe you're a little banged up. And look, and there's scenarios too where PB, a guy's guy's in a contract year or he comes off an injury. I get it.
Right.
You know, like that.
Vinny Hinostroza, for example, or whatever he's going through.
Like yeah, like all those things play into it. But when you got an opportunity and you know, when guys don't go. You know, I had this conversation with Kaner a couple of years ago when he didn't go. He had an opportunity to go and he chose not to. It's disappointing, you know, especially for, you know, like I said, a former player like myself and representing, you know, Team USA over there, is that when you got that chance, I would encourage everybody to go and you'll have a great time. Like, you'll meet guys and you get to travel the world. I mean, you know, like I said, it was a great time to be able to represent our country, not only at the World Championships, but also when I was a 17-year-old kid at the Olympics and also playing in a bunch of Canada Cups for Team USA back in 84, 87, and 91. So kind of like the World Cup of Hockey now, it was called the Canada Cup. in my era, and I think a lot of that footage is in black and white, and I think you might have been doing some of those games, TB.
Well, I think we both really respect that Patrick Kane made the decision to go, and I think you just take
without a doubt.
You take a look at that roster, and I think a lot of those guys signed on because 88 is there. He's also been paired with Alex DeBrincat in the last couple games. Now, I know Joel Quenneville tried DeBrincat, Schmaltz, and Kane last preseason. I don't think he was really fond about that combo. They weren't together much in the regular season, maybe at the tail end of a power play or what have you. But could you see the Cat, Schmaltz, and Kane as a long-term line for the Blackhawks, or do you not see that being a good fit?
If you tell me what the situation is and where they are as far as points and regular season, I don't. You know, like, again, getting that chemistry. I mean, there is something between Schmaltz and Patrick Kane without question. And look, I mean, 88 makes other players around him better. There is no question about it. He makes the plays that guys can only dream about. Cat is a scorer. He's a shoot-first mentality guy. And look, I say never, but I just look at it probably more from a coach's point of view than I do as a, you know, like, look, if I'm on there, I'm saying, yeah, I'm playing with those guys. Are you kidding me? I don't care that if we're going to have the puck all the time, who needs to play defense, right?
Right.
Like, that's the best defense in the world. But, I don't see that as being a long-term. I could see that as a jolt. I can see that as a, you know, if you need a, you know, something to spark the team or whatever, but I think that again, what are your options? Like, what are your options for Coach Q? And those are all the things that you got to kind of play into it. But just, you know, on first, it just doesn't seem like a line to me that would have sustained success, over a course of a tough 82 game schedule.
All right, last one for you. I promised the folks a little horse racing conversation. You like Justify heading into the Derby. You made some people some money following that race. Now that you've seen him, do you think he is a legit Triple Crown contender?
Well, the horse that I picked in the race, the 6 horse Good Magic, ended up finishing second. So I thought that Justify was the horse to beat without question, and I'm glad, and I'm hoping that yes, people did follow my advice, giving out the 5-6-7, and it came in 7-6-5. So if you boxed it in a trifecta, you for a dollar, you got $144. If you're like our buddy David Kaplan, you probably had it like 100 times, and you're. You're buying clothes for the lovely and talented Mindy Kaplan. So, he just the best way to describe it, PB, for me was when I was around him during the week leading up to the Derby, and then being around the other horses. Like, I looked at Justify and go, like, this is a man. Like he just was like 150 pounds heavier than everybody else. He was way taller. He was way broader. He just looked like he knew that, you know what, you guys are all running for second place. And, you know, if you're around animals in general, like, they're pretty darn intelligent, and horses are too. And he just had that demeanor about him, PB, where he just, like, he's a man amongst freshmen in college. Like, that's what he looked like to me. And just, you know, Bob Baffert, the trainer of Justify, and for people, maybe that name sounds familiar. Like, he won the Triple Crown a couple of years ago with American Feral. So, you know, it's hard to miss Bob, the white haired wizard there. I mean, he's going to be, you know, he's going to go down in history here as maybe the greatest thoroughbred trainer on dirt that we've ever had. And I'd be shocked. But it is a horse race. Once that gate opens, you just never know. But he certainly looks like he is the real deal, and going to be really, really difficult to try to make any money because he's going to be a really short price at the Preakness in about a week and a half. But it was just a thrill to be there, and it was one of those goals, PB, that I kind of set on my calendar. Once I got through my first chemo treatment back in September, was like, my goal was to, you know, get back and work with the great Pat Foley and work with Doc Emmerich on the national games. And be back around the people that I love and the games that I love. And one of those goals for me was to be back at the United Center and doing games and traveling every once in a while. And you know, and one of the last ones was, you know, I got to be back at the Derby. Like I got to get back and be healthy. And I was able to check that box, and it was it was emotional, and just feel just so relieved that I'm on the right side of the grass and the right side of this battle with stage 3 colon cancer. And again, I'd be remiss, PB, if I didn't thank the entire Blackhawk organization. I mean, Rocky Wirtz, you know, John McDonough with the texts and the calls and just checking in and seeing if I need anything. You know, Jay Blunk, Coach Q, a lot of the players, a lot of the veteran guys that I've gotten to know over the last handful of years. You know, our broadcasters, you know, Johnny Weideman, my former line mate on the Clydesdales, the great Troy Murray, always checking in and just, you know, and like I said, my partner, the great Pat Foley. I mean, what he did last year at Wrigley Field and throwing out the first pitch and having my jersey on and stuff. I mean, I still get emotional when I think about it. And my friends in the media, PB, you and Mary. I mean, you guys always checking in on me. It helped. And the great fans out there that sending me texts or emails or mass cards or get well cards. I'm a lucky guy that I had that support, and you know, I had people leaving me messages on my cell phone. I have no idea who they were, but they got my cell number and they were just wishing me well, and it made me and my family feel so good. And my wife Diana, of almost 30 years coming up in August, was there every step of the way, and my kids and my folks and my brothers. And I just, like I said, I would be remiss if I didn't thank everybody again. And I was able to kind of get one of those mile markers at the Kentucky Derby to be there. And it felt so good. And just really appreciative of all the support out there.
Well, you know, you've been a part of team sports your entire life. The team you had medically, your friends and family, and just all the fans around Chicago, around the NHL, the hockey world that sent their love and prayers. It was a team effort, and you gave that back a hundredfold to those that are battling cancer around the world. So,
well, thanks, PB. And I'm glad you mentioned that because, minus one on Olchek, but, yeah, I mean, the team of doctors that I had and the caregivers, Dr. Michael Terry, everybody knows Doc, from watching the Blackhawk games, like he was the captain, and he got everybody involved at Northwestern Hospital, who were my team, and I'll be forever grateful. And it'd take me the rest of my life to thank everybody, but I'm going to certainly try to do that. And again, as I said to you, PB, many a times, that you know my goal is to tell my story without being overbearing. But if I can help one person deal with it or stay away from what I had to go through, then it'd be well worth me sharing my story with whoever it might be, whether you're a hockey fan or horse racing fan. And like I said, the horse racing community in our town, I mean, the people at Hawthorne and at Arlington and Midwest Thoroughbreds, and I mean, just, you know, the Carey family and, you know, Howard Sudbury. I just go on and on, and just people that, you know, my buddy Jim Miller. I was just very, very lucky, and I'll be forever grateful from our entire family. And And like Pat and I talked about, the great Pat Foley, is when, you know, I announced that I was cancer free. That, I mean, it was, I meant what I said, is that we did it. And I know where you're getting at with the team part. So I just appreciate all the support and look forward to bigger and better days ahead.
Well, we look forward to seeing you. I know at the Preakness in a few weeks, you're going to be doing the Daily Double. You're going to be going right from the Preakness to the Capitals Lightning Series, I believe, right?
Yeah, I'll be going back and forth. Actually, quick, my schedule is going to be, I'm going to be in studio after Game 7. I'm going to be in studio for NBCSN and NBC on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then I'm going to travel to Washington for Games 3 and 4, head to Baltimore for the Preakness the following Saturday, and then I'll jump back on that Capitals Lightning Series for Game 6, and if it does get to 7. So, yeah, busy time, but I kind of got lucky, PB. I'll be in Washington, and all I got to do is just jump in a car and drive to Baltimore for the Preakness. So the people at the Friendly Skies United Airlines are going to be a little disappointed. I'm not going to be flying all over the world during that week.
Well, brother, after the journey you've been on, you deserve it. It's we call it the two best words in sports, Game 7. They're made even better when the two words Eddie Olczyk is in the booth. So we're looking forward to your call Thursday night with the great Doc Emmerich, and we'll be watching.
Okay, PB, thanks a lot, pal. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot to Eddie Olczyk for joining us on the Hawks Talk podcast, brought to you by our Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Thanks for listening, everybody, and go Hawks.